Anyway, okay, we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph top line. We've been talking the last couple of blocks off and on about the crossing of the Yaudin and setting up the stones and Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and the writing of the Torah on them and so on and so forth. So now the Gemara brings a braisa that summarizes everything they did that day. Now we learned the other day, actually, we had a machlokas tanoim, we had Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, discussing where exactly how Gerizim and how Eval were they the well-known mountains of that name near Shechem, or were they something closer to the Yaudin, either other mountains that exist there naturally that also bear those names, or maybe mounds of dirt from the Rashami says mounds of dirt that they set up on the spot over there, whatever the case. And we also had the opinion over there that this happened only many years later, but the Braisa that we're going to quote now is going to follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda over there, that in fact we are talking about the well-known Har Gerizim and Har Eval in what's now the land of the Kusim, and that they all went and that they went there on the same day they crossed the Yarden. So the Braisa says, "Boyurei kamen nisim nasu ba'isayon." Come see how many nisim were done for the Jewish people on that day. First of all, over Yisrael to Yarden, they crossed the Yarden with all the nisim that were involved with that, as we learned before. Then they came to Har Gerizim and Har Eval, which is a distance of over 60 mil, which is around 40 miles. And during all that time, the ain kobriya yecholah lamed b'fnehem, no creature, meaning none of the goyim, are able to stand up against them to block their way, or actually Ben Yehoyada says kobriya means even animals. Nobody even attempted to, nobody was able to make a stand against them. You'd think they're right away coming into Eretz Yisrael. You'd think the goyim over there would try to make a stand against them and then try to bar their passage, but no. If anybody did try to stand in front of them, miyad nitraz, he would right away lose control of his bowels because he'd be so terrified of them that would happen. Anybody who tries to do that would happen. So therefore, nobody else after that even tried. Shenema is the pasuk says. Hashem says, "Es emosi ashalach lefanecha, I will send my fear in front of you, v'hamosius kol amash atover behem v'vemer, and I will terrify all the nations that you will come among them." So Rashi explains the word v'hamosi means maloshin mahuma, is a loshin of confusion. So in this case, it means confusion of what's inside the body, as in like therefore their digestive system doesn't even work properly, and it just comes out when it's not even expected to. So we see from that that that's what was happening, and they were terrified of the Yidden, so they didn't try to bar their way. But Omer, and we have another pasuk, and then in Oz Yashu, Tipul Aleim and Masav Afachad, there should fall upon them fear and dread. Ad Yaver Amcha Hashem, until your people, and the pasuk, now the pasuk says, Ad Yaver Amcha Hashem, Ad Yaver Amzukanisa. The pasuk mentions twice going over. It says, until your people pass over Hashem, until your people that you acquired for yourself cross over. So what are these two crossing over? So Ad Yavar Am Hashem Zubir Rishona, that refers to the first time they came into Eretz Yisrael now in Yeshua's times and crossed the Yarden. And when it continues, Ad Yavar Am Zukarnisa, when it continues in the Pasuk that your people whom you acquired for yourself have passed over, that really is talking about Zubir Shnia. That's talking about the second time that they came into Eretz Yisrael after when they came to build the second Beis HaMikdash in the times of Ezra, when also the pasuk is implying that there should have been a fear of the goyim. Marsha points out that actually Targum Onkelos on the pasuk understands it differently. Targum Onkelos understands that both of them are referring to crossings that they did in the time before they went into Eretz Yisrael, one across the Arnon, and one across the Yarden. However, Marsha says, the fact is, we don't really find in connection with the crossing of the Arnon, we know the big nisim over there, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, but we don't really find over there an expression of crossing over there, as opposed to you do find an expression of crossing by when it comes to coming back to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to understand it that way. So Emre Me'ata, so continues the Gemara. So you see, based on that, Ru'uyin Hoyu Yisrael Lasis Lem Nes B'Viyashnia Kibir Rishon. It should have been by rights that the Jewish people should have a nes happen to them the second time they came to Eretz Yisrael in the times of Ezra, like the first time. In other words, it should have been the same thing, that all the goyim are terrified of them and they're able to just march into Eretz Yisrael unopposed. In fact, it wasn't that way. First of all, they needed Kodesh's permission to even rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and the goyim over there harassed them and eventually got the work stopped. And even when it started again, they were still causing them a lot of trouble. And in Nehemiah, it talks about how they were rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim, and they had to stand guard to that the goyim shouldn't attack them. So why is that? El shegora machet. The reason is because their sins prevented that. So Rashi explains, we're talking about the sins back from the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. They had worshipped Avodah Zarah, they'd done all kinds of other serious Avedas. So even though now they have the schus to come and rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash, nevertheless, there was still an after effect of that. And therefore they needed permission from Kodesh and so forth. On the other hand, a number of the Mefoshim say, Rav Yaakov Emdin, among others, points out that, why is Hashem punishing the children for the Avedas of their fathers? So, of course, one answer is, the Gemara says that when they're still continuing in the same ways, then Hashem does. You could say that they still had the same mentality of a Avodah, the Yetzer was taken away for, but they had the other problems. But a number of the Mefoshim say that we're talking about the problems that they had at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, in particular, the problem of intermarriage, where you find Ezra and Nehemiah and the Novi Malachi all dealing with it. So according to that, then that would be the Aveira that prevent, that would be the type of Aveira that prevented there from being this kind of nest the second time around. The Meshech Chochmah, by the way, makes a very interesting point in this connection. He says that, let's contrast the Golos of Mitzrayim with the Golos of Babel. In Mitzrayim, they didn't have the Torah yet, but they were very careful, as we know, not to assimilate among the Goyim. They didn't change their names and their language and so forth. On the other hand, in Babel, they already had the Torah, and they learned Torah on a very high level, too. Babel was always a center of Torah ever since the Jews came there. But we're saying that they were starting to assimilate among the Goyim and intermarry with them or whatever. So we see that in Golos, even more important than learning Torah is to preserve our identity as Jews and not to compromise it. Anyway, so that's the Brai said, interjected that to explain that Pasuk Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem Ad Yavar Am Zukanisa. Getting back now to, again, the list of Nisim that happened on the day they crossed the Yarden. So we said so far there was the crossing of the Yarden itself with all the Nisim that accompanied that. Then there was that they traveled all the way to Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and nobody stands up to oppose them. Then the Braisa continues, then they brought the stones, which they brought from the Yarden, they built the Mizbeach on Har Eval, like it says in the Torah, the Saduhu Basid, they plastered it where they covered it with plaster, that's called Dira Torah B'Shivim Loshen, and they wrote all the words of the Torah on them in 70 languages, which that itself, if we have, now we've talked about before, there's machlokas among the Rishonim, whether they actually wrote the whole Torah, or whether they just wrote a list of the 613 mitzvahs or something like that. But if they wrote the entire Torah and they had to write it with all the details, with all the tagim and everything, and in 70 languages, then of course it took a big mess for that to happen alone. The stones must have been very big, but still that itself would have been a big mess. With that said, by the way, Tosfos brings a girsa from the Tosefta that they built the Mizbeach and brought Olos HaShlomim. That leaves out the words of Kosvo, all of us at Torah, because according to that Tosefta, the writing wasn't done on the Mizbeach itself. But the version we have in front of us in the Gemara over here is that they did actually, they wrote on those stones of the Mizbeach, they wrote the entire Torah, B'Shivim Loshen. Because again, as we said in the Mishnah, it says that they have to be clearly explained, and that means it has to be explained in all 70 languages so all the nations of the world can understand it. We talked about, Marsha mentioned on the Mishnah, that the word hative itself has, if you use a form of gematria on it, called Hakar, I think it is, where you take first all four letters, Hey Yud Tes Beis, then just again the Yud Tes Beis, then the Tes Beis, then the Beis, then it adds up to 70. Anyway, so they did all that. Marsha, by the way, points out, we're saying this Braisa is according to Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda is the one who said before that first they wrote on the stones and then they plastered them. So why are we mentioning the plastering over here first? So he explains, we don't mean the plastering that they did in order to have a writing surface. We mean just when they're building the mizbeach, you have to put plaster between the stone to hold them together. Anyway, continues the Braisa. V'helu olos shlomim. They brought olos and shlomim, because that's the in Parashas Kisavoy, when it tells about it, it says, v'zavach the shlomim v'achalta sham. They ate and they drank and they were happy. They did the brachas uklolos all on that same day. Although actually there's an interesting explanation from the Vilna Gaon that the berchu over here does not mean the brachas of the brachas uklolos that we're going to talk about soon, but rather he says it means benching. Actually, he takes out the word v'kilolu and he says uberchu. They made the bracha, meaning that they benched. We know that you have four brachas in benching, and the second one was composed by Yeshua, the bracha nodelacha. So according to that, the idea would be on that day Yeshua was masakin for them the nusach of the second bracha, and that was the first time that they ever said it. Anyway, the Braisa continues v'kiplu asavonim. Now at that point, they kiplu the stones. Now kiplu literally means folded up, but Gurin Ashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings that sometimes the word v'kiplu can actually mean like v'kilfu, just by rearranging the letters, and it means then they peeled off the plaster from off the stones so that they could take the stone. So they peeled off the plaster from the stones. So one meaning would be because, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they took the stones to Gilgal. So according to that, it would be the very same stones. So they have to transport them. So they have to remove the plaster so they can break them back into individual stones. There's also an explanation from one of the Rishonim that they wanted to have these should be a permanent monument of that the Jewish people crossed the Yarden. Therefore, these stones were taken from the Yarden. So therefore, they removed the plaster so you would more easily see that these are the very same stones. Anyway, uvo v'lonu b'Gilgal, and then still on that day, they went and slept overnight in Gilgal, which was the place where they had their first camp in Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Vaha vartem oisem imachem," you should bring them. You should bring the stones with you. Yeshua says to the people, "V'inachtem oisem b'malon," and you should put them in the lodging place. So therefore, in other words, the stones that they brought from the Yarden, they have to wind up putting them in the place where they lodge, where they stay. So you would think that it means in every place they stay, they have to bring them from one place to another. Nope. Therefore, the pasuk continues, Yeshua continues to them, in the place where you stay over tonight. So in other words, wherever it is that we're staying tonight, which ended up being Gilgal, then that is where we need to put up those stones as a permanent monument. Sure enough, the pasuk says the 12 stones that they took from the Yarden, Yeshua set them up in Gilgal. So they did exactly that. So this braisa is saying that all of that happened on that same day. So therefore, you see, in other words, what a mess it was that they were able to fit all of these events and all of these actions into one day, and also that and also the various other nisim that they're all the nisim involving the crossing of the Yarden and the marching unopposed over there the whole way to Har Gerizim and Har Eval and back. Okay, now speaking of what prevented the goyim from attacking them, in a couple of places in Chumash, it talks about that, and afterwards Yeshua mentions it in his speeches to the Jewish people and so forth. So it mentions that there was a tzira that attacked the Knanim. A tzira is, it's a hornet in English. It's an insect that can sting a person and then can be very dangerous. So in a few places it mentions it over there in Parshas Mishpatim, right after the pasuk that say Masi Ashalach Lefanecha. It mentions it in Parshas Ekev. Anyway, so there was this tzira, there was this hornet or group of hornets, as the case may be, that attacked the Knan. So let's talk about that. Tana, we learn at a price that tzira loy ovre imahim. This tzira did not cross the Yarden with them, meaning, in other words, so Rashi on the Psukim explains, actually, that in the pasuk where it first talks about the tzira in Parshas Mishpatim, it says that the tzira will help drive out the Chivi, the Knani, and the Chiti. Now those are three of the seven nations of Canaan. But what happened to all the other ones? So therefore, so that shows us that the Tzira did not cross the Yarden. So therefore, it's listing only the ones that are located, only the it's listing only the ones that were that lived on the other side, on the east side of the Yarden. So it dealt with them. It poisoned them, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, and therefore it allowed the Yidden to defeat them much easier. So the Gemara asks, "Veloy, you're telling me that not? Doesn't the pasuk say I'll send the tzira in front of you? So therefore, that implies that it actually crossed the Yarden with them and attacked the goyim in Eretz Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael proper and Eretz Canaan as well." So the answer is Amr of Shimon Lakish, Al Sfas Yarden Amda. What happened was it didn't cross the Yarden, but it stayed by the banks of the Yarden, Vizorka Bahen Mara, and across the Yarden it shot poison at them. And the Chivi was the particular nation that lived closest to the wet to the west bank of the Yarden. When the Meraglim come back with their report, they report that the Chivi is living near the Yarden. So the Chivi lived in that area. So it shot poison across at them. Simsa inein milamaila, and that poison that the Tzira injected in them, it blinded their eyes from above, viserastin milamata, and it castrated them from below, so they're not able to see, and they're not able to have children in the future. So therefore, in other words, that helped eradicate them from Eretz Yisrael. As you have much later, Hashem tells the Navi Amos, when he's talking about how the Jewish people are being so ungrateful and worshipping Avodah Zarah and ignoring what Hashem wants, etc., Hashem says, it's in Haftorah, Parshas Vayeshev, V'anochi hishmadti asa amodi mipneihem, I destroyed the Amori from their presence, Ashek gova arozim gavhoi, where these Amori were as tall as cedars, v'chosin hukah alonim, and they were strong as alonim, which are oak trees, V'ashmid piryam imal, and the pasuk continues that I destroyed their fruit from above, which refers to their eyes. V'sharosh of mitochas, and its roots from below. V'goymer, and the roots referring to the fact that they were castrated and they're not able to have they're made infertile and they're not able to have children anymore. So we see, in other words, that that was the effect that the Tzira had on them. But Rish Lakish is saying that the Tzira did not go all over Eretz Canaan with them, but it was able to affect the Goyim who are living near the banks of the Yarden, namely the Chiti, as well as previously it affected the Goyim who were living in Eber HaYarden, the lands of Sichon and Og, and that made it easier for the Jews to conquer those areas. That's all how Rash learns. Marsha points out some problems with that. For one thing, we find that the Pachitim lived in Hebron. So where are we getting that Pachitim lived in Eber HaYarden, like Rashi wants to say? Rather, he says we learn from a pasuk when Yoshua at the end of his life is summarizing what Hashem did for the Jewish people. He says, "I sent the Tzira and it destroyed, and your print destroyed from before you the two kings of the Amori." So we see that it affected Sichon and Og, but not the other ones. But then what happened to Rishalachti as Tzira? And the answer is again that it stood over there by the banks of the Yarden and squirted poison across. And he goes on to explain that even though as tall as they were, nevertheless the Tzira was able to affect them with both the top of their bodies, which is the eyes, and they're called fruit in the pasuk, because just like fruit is the main product of the tree, the same way that what a person sees with his eyes is the main thing that brings him to do Averis. And then the roots from below. So even though they were so tall, the Tzira was still able to affect them like that. Okay. In any case, the point is, Rish Lakish is saying that the Tzira didn't actually cross the Yarden. It affected the people of the lands of Sichon and Og and the Goyim who lived immediately on the west side of the Yarden, and that's it. On the other hand, Rapapa almost state Tziras Havoi. Rapapa answers there were two different Tziras. Chodah de Moshe, b'chodah de Yeshua. There was one of Moshe's times and another one of Yeshua's times. De Moshe loy avar, the one from Moshe's times, it's true, did not cross the Yarden, and that's the one we're saying that affected the people of Sichon and Og. Yeshua, over the one from Yeshua's times, actually went across the Yarden with them and affected not only the goyim who were living by the banks of the Yarden, but even the ones who were living further inland. And the Iyun Yaakov points out, so why do you need that one? If you just have the same tzira goes across the Yarden with them, because Hashem tells Yeshua, I'm going to make you as great in the eyes of the Jewish people, that just as I was with Moshe, I was with you. So therefore, so you don't want people to think that, oh, there's still the tzira, it's just a continuation of what Moshe did. Therefore, that tzira left and didn't cross the Yarden with them, and a new one came along, and that way everybody would realize how great Yeshua is, that he has his own independent source for this to happen. Now, going back to the Mishnah had said, after we described how they set up the stones, the Pasuk says, the Mishnah had said, Shisha Shvatim Olo L'Rosh Har Grizim Chula, six Shvatim went to the top of Har Grizim, six to the top of Har Evel, the Levium stood in the middle below the Koyanim and Levium and the Oren stood in the middle below, and they did the Bracha Sekolos, as we said in the Mishnah. So let's talk about that. So the Gemara starts with the Mai Bahachetzio. Now, so you have like this. The Pasuk describes the ceremony in three different places. In Parshas Re'eh, it just says briefly that you have to go and do the Barachas Aklalas on Har Grizim and Har Evel, and says where they're located. In Parshas Kisavoy, it gives more details about that, about what they have to do, including the plaster and the writing the Torah and bringing Shlomim and so on and so on. And the actual list of the Barachas Aklalas, and also you have over there the list of the six Shvatim on each on one mountain and the six on the other. Then you have in Sefer Yoshua, it tells how they actually did that. In Sefer Yoshua, actually, it tells that you have they cross the Yarden in Perek Dalad. They attack Yericho in Perek Vav. They also have a battle with Ai in Perek Zion and then in Perek Ches. And only then at the end of Perek Ches does it describe the Brachas Aklalas. Most of the Mephoshim say, based on what we were saying before, that it all happened right after they came to Eretz Yisrael, that this is an example of Ein Muktam Ma'ocha Batorah, that even though it's written after they had captured a couple of cities in Eretz Yisrael, in fact, it happened before that. Anyway, so now when the Pasuk in Yeshua describes how they did it, it describes that everybody's standing over there by Har Grizim and Har Evel, and the Pasuk says half chetzio, it says half of them were standing on Har Grizim, the half chetzio and the half were standing on Mul Har Evel. So what's this word, my v'hachetzio? What's this word, v'hachetzio, which suggests the half that's known from someplace else? So Rashi explains, the word v'hachetzio can have two meanings. It can mean the special half, or it can mean the half that we know from someplace else. So what do we mean by that? So Omer of Kahana, k'derech shachalukin kan, the same way as they're divided up over here, the same division that you have that describes in the Pesukim in Parshas Kisavoy, where you have Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin on one mountain and the other six Shevatim on the other, kach chalukin ba'avnei Ephod. Rav Kahana says they were divided in the exact same way when it comes to the stones of the Ephod. So the Kohen Gadol wore the ephod, and on the two shoulder straps of it, there were two shoyham stones, each one engraved with the names of six of the Shvatim. So Rav Kahana is learning that the order of how the Shvatim were written on the stones is exactly the way it was, is exactly the same order as you had here by Har Grizim and Har Evel. The six that were on Har Grizim were on one stone, the six that were on Har Evel were the other one. The idea behind it being, Marashah says, since here we have this klolos involved, on the other hand, with the ephod, the purpose of it is lizikorin levnei Yisrael, that Hashem should remember for the good of the Jewish people. So therefore, he says that's why Rav Kahana draws a connection between them. We shouldn't think that there was just a klola, that no, it corresponds to the brachos that Hashem gives them as a result of them being on the ephod. However, the Gemara says, maybe I have a contradiction. So therefore, that's the word v'hachetzri, meaning the half that we know of from someplace else, where half of them were written on one of the stones of the ephod, that same division was kept over here. So the Gemara says, maybe though, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, shtei avonim tovus hoyle the Kohen Gadol oksevav. The Kohen Gadol had two precious stones on his shoulders. achas mikan ba'achas mikan, one on each shoulder. Ushmois shnei moser shvatim kosev aleihem. The names of the 12 shvatim were written on them. Shishal evan zu v'shishal evan zu. Six on one stone, six on the other. Shenem ashishim shvoisim al evan achas v'gemer. The pasuk has six of their names on one stone. Now the pasuk goes on to say. So it says six names on one stone, and then it says, and the other six on the other stone. Kisel doisam, like according to their birth. Now, why does it only say kisel doisam in connection with the second group? So the Braisa says that means shnia kisel doisam, v'loy rishona kisel doisam, means only on the second stone were they written in the actual order that they were born. So Rashi explains, in other words, on the second stone, on the second stone, you had the last six shvatim who were born. God, Osho, Yisachar, Zvolun, Yosef, and Binyamin. On the other hand, but the first one was not written because Yehuda was moved up ahead. Instead of on the first stone having the Braisa saying, instead of having Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, you saw Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, Naphtali, which are the first six to be born, it had those six, but it put Yehuda before Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So therefore, so on the first stone it wasn't Ketel Dosam, and on the second one it was. And the Braisa continues, v'chamishim osias hayu, altogether there were 50 letters on the two stones, esrim b'chamash aleven zu, v'esrim b'chamash aleven zu, 25 on one stone, 25 on the other. If you count up the name, the number of the letters in the Shvatim's names, you come up to 50. And the Braisa continues, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, he disagrees and says, loy kederach shechalukin b'chumash apkodim. No, the order of the names on the stones was not the same as in Chumash apkodim, which is the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar. Where there you have at the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, you have it listed in the Siyim of each of the Shvatim, and the order over there is. First, this is the first you have the six. First you have this the Shvatim from Leah, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvolun. Then you have Ephraim, Menashe, and then you have the rest of them: Binyamin, Don, God, Asher, God, and Naphtali. So he says that's not the order. Ela kederach shakalokin b'chumash shein. Rather, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says the order of the words, the order of the names on the stones of the Ephod was according to the order that you have at the beginning of Chumash Shmos. When it talks over there, when it lists the Eilah Shmos ben Israel, Aboy Mitzrayma, and it lists the names of the Shvatim, so that was the order that it was kept. So what does that mean? Ketzad, so what does Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says? So what do we mean? B'nei Leah Kisidron, you have on one stone, you have the names of the children of Leah in their exact order, the order in which they were actually born. So here, the Tanakhama had said that you're doing them according to the order that they were born, which means that Yisachar and Zvolun come later, because they were born after Don, Naphtali, God, and Asher. Here, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying that they were done according to the order in Chumash Shmos, where Yisachar and Zvolun are listed together with their elder brothers. All the sons of Leah are on one stone. And as far as Bnei Rachel, as far as the children of Rachel, you have Echad Mikan and Echad Mikan. The list on the second stone begins and ends with children of Rachel. So you have Binyamin on at one end and Yosef at the other end, because that's how they're listed in Shmos. It lists the 11 Shvatim who came down to Mitzrayim, and then it says V'Yosef Oyev Mitzrayim. So at the beginning of the second stone, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says you have Binyamin first, Yosef last. And the children of the Shvachas, Don, Naphtali, God, and Asher, are in the middle. So the order on the second stone would have been Binyamin, Don, Naphtali, God, Asher, Yosef. That's how he says it. And so he says, "Ve'elamani mekayim ketol dosam." So then, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says, "Then what am I doing with the word ketol dosam? Where that's not according to the order they were born, because after all, Binyamin was the last born. It just means it doesn't mean according to the order they were born. It means kishmosan shakara lahen avien. It means it's following the order that they mean. It means it's following the names that they were given when they were born, that Yaakov called them, or that their mothers called them." Not the names of the Shvatim that came from them, which later on Moshe calls them. For example, Ruvain Veloiru Uvain. For example, you have in the Torah in Parshas Pinchas, when you have the census, so it says it mentions over there Ruvain. So it mentions over there Eleb Neho Ruveni. So therefore, so you should know on the stones of the ephod, it wasn't written like that. It was written Ruven as he was named when he was born. Similarly, Shimon, Velo Shimoni, and the same thing, Shimon rather than Shimoni, and the rest of them. So Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel says the word Ketol Dosem has nothing to do with the order. Similarly, Don Velo Hadoni, God Velo Hagodi. Anyway, the point is, so we see from this Braisa, so we have a couple of different opinions about the order of the names on the ephod, but none of them agree with Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana is saying that you divided them the same way as they were divided by Har Grizim and Har Abel, which would be therefore that one stone has Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin, and the other one has Reuven, God, Yehuda, Don, Naphtali, God, and Asher. So that doesn't fit according to that. So that doesn't fit according to any of the opinions in the Braisa. So the Gemara says you're right. Kyuvta de Rav Kahana. So that would be a clear contradiction on Rav Kahana. And the Gemara says you're right. Kyuvta, that is a contradiction on him. We don't say they were divided. We don't say they were divided in the order. Here you have the Psukim described that by Har Grizim and Har Evel, you had one mountain had Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Yamin. The other one had Reuven, God, Asher, Zvolun, Don, Naphtali. But none of the opinions in the Braisa agree with either of those orders. So therefore, so two of us, so that's it. We've schlugged up Rav Kahana. It wasn't the same order. Mind you, within how they were arranged on the stones of the ephod, you have Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi holds like the straightforward reading of our Gemara over here, that it means that you have the different opinions of Tanoim, the Pashtus, the Halacha would be like the Tanakama that they had. It was in the order of their birth. So therefore, the first stone would accept that Yehuda was first. So therefore, you'd have the first stone would have Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar. The first stone then would have Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Don, Naphtali. And the second one would have God, Asher, Yisachar, Zvulun, Yosef, and Binyamin. On the other hand, the Rambam holds that they actually it was meant to go back and forth. You have Reuven on the first stone, Shimon on the second one, then back to Levi on the first one, Yehuda on the second one, and so on and so forth. So he has the names alternating between the stones. There's a sicha, and I think but I don't remember, where the Rebbe analyzes that and talks about the idea behind it, that Rashi and the Rambam basically are debating about what we have to have. The stones are meant to represent the Achdus of the Jewish people. How do we most represent that Achdus? In the fact that they're all the children of Yaakov, and therefore we put them in the order in which they were born, or in the fact that the two stones together form one big Achdus, and therefore we have to have the names in order to get the proper order of the names. You have to go back and forth between them. So now that we slugged up Rav Kahana and was saying that the division on the stones of the ephod is not the same as the division on Har Grizim and Har Evel, so then we're back to Ve'elamai Vahachetzioi. So what do we mean with the words with this word Vahachetzioi? What does the extra hay represent? So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, it means Chetzia Shol Mul Har Grizim Meruba Mechetzia Shol Har Evel. Means the half that was on Har Grizim was larger than the half on Har Evel. So in other words, when the Pasuk is saying Chetzia El Mul Har Grizim, the half that was on Har Grizim, El Mul, by the way, literally means opposite, but sometimes in Chumash, the word Mul means like further down. So Mul Har Grizim would mean further down Har Grizim. So that half was larger than the half of Har Evel. So therefore, V'hach Chetzia El Mul Har Evel means the lesser half. So the Jewish people were divided, and you have a smaller number were on Har Evel than on Har Grizim. And the Braisa says Mipnei Shel Levi Lamata, because Shevet Levi, or not the whole Shevet Levi, but the Skenim of Shevet Levi, as the Gemara is going to discuss later on, were standing below. They weren't standing on Har Evel together with the rest of Shevet Levi. Or on Har Grizim, rather, they were supposed to be on Har, that Shevet Levi is one of the ones on Har Grizim. The elders of Shevet Levi weren't standing on Har Grizim, they were standing below in the valley between the two mountains. So the Gemara asks, Adraba, well, in that case, then, if most of Shevet Levi is supposed to be on Har Grizim, and you're saying that some of them stood below, Adraba, Mipnesha Levi Lamata Batsri Lahu, then on the contrary, if you're saying that some of the Levium stood below, then that means you have fewer people. What are you telling me that fewer people were on Har Evel? It comes out, according to that, fewer people would have been on Har Grizim, because you have like this, the entire Shevet Levi wasn't there, only part of it. Meanwhile, you have the entire, the rest of five Shvatim were there, and six entire Shvatim were on the other mountain. So wouldn't it come out then that there were more on Har Evel? And the answer is no. What it means is, what the Braisa means, Hochikomer, Afa Pisha Levi Lamata, even though part of Shevet Levi was standing below, nevertheless, Bnei Yosef Imohim, nevertheless, the children of Yosef, We're on how Grizim, because again in the Psukim when it lists over there who was on which mountain, it lists over there Yosef is one of the ones on how Grizim, and Shevet Yosef was more numerous. So therefore Shenemar, as we find in the Psukim, now you have in the censuses in Parshas Pinchas, which is only a short time before this, you don't have that. You don't seem to see that Shevet Yosef is much more numerous than the other Shvatim. But now when they came into Eretz Yisrael, particularly, Shenemar, Vaydabru, later on, you have when they're dividing up Eretz Yisrael, Vaydabru b'nei Yosef as Yeshua Lamer, the children of Yosef spoke with Yeshua to argue with him that they should to argue with him that they should be entitled to a larger portion in Eretz Yisrael. So they say, "Madua nasatli nachla gerdel echad b'chevel echad. Why did you give me as an inheritance only one gerdel and one portion? V'ani amrav v'goyma when I'm such a numerous nation." So we see that Shevet Yosef's population had grown much larger. So therefore, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, also, so even though we're saying, even though some of the Levim were down below in the valley, nevertheless, since on Har Grizim you had Shevet Yosef, then that counterbalanced and made that still you have more people on Har Grizim than you have on Har Evel. Tosfos actually, the Tosfos on Amud Aleph brings actually from the Yerushalmi and says that and discusses that maybe not actually. First it brings, like it says in the Gemara over here, that first it brings the opposite of the Gemara over here. There were less on Har Grizim and there were more on Har Evel, and therefore the word v'hachetzio would mean the larger half. Again, because not all of Shevet Levi is there. And then the Yerushalmi goes on to say, the fact is there would have, the fact is because so many people were killed from Shevet Shimon, 24,000 people from Shevet Shimon passed away in Shittim, with the whole thing of Benois Midian, then therefore that there weren't enough. And then it goes on to say that not all of Shevet Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe were there, because only their warriors came. The rest of them stayed behind in Eber HaYarden. And Tosfos goes into some discussion about the ins and outs of that and what the calculation is of if we can calculate how many people there actually were on each of the two mountains.
During that time is when Ophir Binyamin lost the...
No, Binyamin was Pelagish Begiver is much later. Right. That's later. That's in the times of the Shoftim. So again, Tosfos goes into a whole detailed calculation about the respective populations of the Shvatim. And then if we subtract the people of Reuven and Gad that stayed behind in Eber HaYarden, and we consider the number of Shevet Shimon that died in the plague, and so on and so forth. Marsha also goes into discussing in some detail the ins and outs of those numbers. I did once see somebody actually went and tried to make a calculation. If we don't assume like what Tosfos is bringing from the Yerushalmi, that part of Shevet Reuven and Gad stayed behind, but rather that all of them were there, somebody made a calculation and found that the division of the Shvatim, as given there in Parshas Kisavo, makes it that you have the most even, the most balanced number of people on each of the mountains. In other words, you have either, as Or Gemara is saying, as the Bavli is saying, you have more people on Grizim than Evel, or like the Yerushalmi the other way around, more on Evel than on Grizim. But somebody made a calculation and found of all the possible ways of arranging the Shvatim, this one comes out with the most even balance of people on the two mountains. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, we see that Shevet Yosef was very numerous, and therefore that counterbalances the fact that not all of Shevet Levi was on that mountain. So we said that Shevet Yosef complained to Yeshua. They say, we don't have enough land. In the Psukim over there, by the way, Yeshua tells them, you know what, you have a whole forest in your part of Eretz Yisrael. Go clear that out, and then you'll have plenty of space to live over there. Well, so they had their two Shvatim. They have two portions in Eretz Yisrael, but still they were complaining, and they're both right next to, one's right next to another. So they considered it one portion, and they're saying it's really not enough. We have such a numerous population. Anyway, so Omer lahen, so Yeshua says to them, you're telling me you're so numerous? When he tells them to go to the forest. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, he's telling them to go to the forest and start chopping down the trees, and you'll clear out land for yourselves to live and to farm. But the Gemara is doubting that he's telling them also, go hide yourselves in the mountain, in the forest, so the Ayin Hara doesn't have control over you. You're boasting about how numerous you are. That could cause an Ayin Hara. So go hide yourselves in the forest to avoid that. But
we count Ayin Hara in those days,
right? Yeah, why not? Ayin Hara exists in all generations, anytime. There's a few different explanations of how it is that Ayin Hara works. One of them being that when a person is flaunting the good that he has, and that causes other people to be jealous, then Hashem takes that into consideration. Is this person Roy, that because of him, other people should be feeling bad, let's say. There's a few different explanations. Anyway, the point is, yes, Ayin Hara has a real thing. But Omrulay, but the children of Yosef told them that's not a problem for us. Zare to Yosef, le shalte be ein abisha. The descendants of Yosef, the Ayin Hara has no effect on them. Dichtiv, as we find when Yaakov ventures Yosef, he says, Bein Poras Yosef. Yosef is a fruitful son. Bein Poras Alei Oyen, a fruitful son above the eye. The word ayin has a few different meanings. It means a spring, it means an eye, etc. But Amar Rav Abahu, I'll tell you kodeh, alei ayin, ela oilei ayin. Not alei ayin, over an ayin, a spring, but rather oilei ayin, they transcend and they go higher than the eye. So the eye, the ayin hara, has no control over them. So they're saying, if it was any other shevet, you're right. You would have to tell them to go hide in the forest. But with us, we don't have a problem with that. Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina says, I have a different proof for this concept that the children of Yosef, the Ayin Hara, has no control over them. Because Yaakov says to them earlier, he says, they should multiply like fish in the midst of the land. So that means, just like the fish in the sea, the water covers them, and therefore the eye can't control them, the eye can't see them, because they're hidden by the water. The same way, the descendants of Yosef, the eye has no control over them. So it's another way of showing that they're not susceptible to Ayin Hara. And there's, in fact, a Gemara in Brachos that says that if a person is concerned that he's going to be affected by Ayin Hara, the Gemara says about there a thing that he should say, where he says that I'm from the descendants of Yosef, and the Ayin Hara has no power. And even he may biologically be descended from Yosef, or maybe not, but still there is actually an idea that's brought in some Midrashim that the whole Jewish people are called children of Yosef, and therefore they can invoke that bracha on themselves. So there, the point we were getting at, though, is that Shevet Yosef was very numerous. And again, the point is then that even though on how grisim you're missing some of the Levium, but that was more than made up for by the extra numbers in Shevet Yosef. And therefore, it comes out there were more Jews on how grisim than how evil. Again, according to what Tosfos is bringing from the Yerushalmi, maybe the other way around, maybe there were more on how evil than how grisim. Okay. Now let's get back to, we talked about before about the order of the names on the stones of the ephod. We said the names were divided, six shvatim written on one and six on the other. And the Braisa had said altogether there are 50 letters, and the names of the shvatim were divided between the stones in such a way that you have 25 letters on each stone. So the Gemara asked,
25 times 6?
No, 25 altogether. The names of six shvatim, the names of six of the shvatim have 25 letters in them. So let's say, for example, according to Rashi, let's say that they were listed in the order that they were born. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, Naphtali, that contains 25 letters. Then the other one, God, Osher, Yisachar, Zvulun, Yosef, and Yamin, would also contain 25 letters. And then similarly, according to the Rambam, and similarly, according to the different opinions. But the Gemara asks, Hani Chamishim Oisius, what do you mean there are 50 letters? Chamishim Nachi Choda Avyan. If you count up the name of the number of letters in all the names of the 12 Shvatim, you have 49 letters. Because the Gemara is assuming that Binyamin is spelt only with the first Yud. Beis Nun Yud Mem Langanun, which in fact, you know, the name Binyamin, of course, is mentioned in many places in Tanakh, and in about 90% of the places where it's mentioned, it's spelt like that. So the Gemara is assuming that it was spelt like that here also. So therefore, that would leave us with 49 letters. And the answer is, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Yosef Hosifu Lo Ois Achas. The answer is that Yosef had one letter added to his name. Shenema, we haven't told him. Eidus Bia Hosef Samib Itseis Alaeth Mitzrayim. So therefore, here was written Yehosef rather than Yosef. So therefore, so that gives you your 50th letter. But Maski Chlor Rab Nachum Yitzchak, but Rab Nachum Yitzchak says, how can you say that? We just said before, Kitol Dosam Ba'inon. The Pasuk says that they have to be written Kitol Dosam according to the way they were born. And that means, now we said before, Rab Chanina ben Gamliel says it means they have to be given the way that their names were given when they were born, not Ruveni and Shimoni and so forth. But it also means, in other words, Yosef was named Yosef when he was born, not Yehosef. So what are you all of a sudden adding? So what are you all of a sudden adding a hay over there? Ella, rather, what we have to answer is kola tertakula binyamin ksiv. No, rather, the answer is in most places in the Torah, the name binyamin is written without the last yud. V'hocha binyamin shalem. But here, when they wrote it on the stones of the on the stones of the ephod, they wrote binyamin out in full with the extra yud. As we find, when Yaakov named him, he named him Binyamin with the extra yud. Rashi explains over there that it means Benyamin. It means he was the son of the right-hand side because he was born in Eretz Yisrael, which is to the south, unlike all the other Shvatim were born in Choron up north. Different Mephoshim also talk about that. Rachel called him Ben Oni, but also the idea is Yomin. Also, Rashi mentions over there that Ben Yomin can also mean the son of days because he was born in Yaakov's old age. Anyway, the point is that he was named over there with the Yud, with the Yudin. So therefore that's how it was written. That's how it was written over here. So that's how it was written over here with Binyamin in full, with the second yud, and that way you have 50 names. That way you have 50 letters. So now let's talk more about this renaming of Yosef. We said that Yosef in one place is called Yehosef. Where does he get the hay from? So Omer of Chonabab Bizna, Omer of Shimon Chasida. The difference is Yosef, Shekidish Shem Shemayim Baseser, Yosef, who created a Kiddush Hashem in secret, because with the whole thing with Potiphar's wife, where nobody else was in the house, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, in the schus of that, one letter of Hashem's name was added to his name. So before he was Yosef, and now he becomes Yehosef. Yehuda, Shekiddush Shem Shemayim B'Fahesia. On the other hand, Yehuda, who made a Kiddush Hashem in public by admitting in the whole thing with Tamar, Nikra Kulay Al Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His entire name is called on the name of Hashem. The name Yehuda has all four letters of Shem Havaya. And now, of course, he was named that long before this happened, but it means that when Leah gave him that name, she had a degree of Ruach HaKodesh to do that. So the Gemara says, Yosef Maidim, what's the story with Yosef being Makadosh Shem Shemayim Baseser? Particularly, the question is how do we see that it was Baseser? How do we know it was Baseser? How do we know that he was in fact almost going to do the Avera and then stayed away? So like this, the pasuk is Vayhi Kai Yom Hazeh, it was as of this day, Vayyove Abay Salasis Malachdei. He came to the house to do his work. So, Omer Rabbi Yochanan Malamed Sheshneim L'Dvar Aver Neskavni. These words in the Pasuk imply that both of them, both Yosef and Potiphar's wife, intended to do an Avera. Because the Pasuk says nobody, the Pasuk is saying that nobody else was there. The Pasuk is saying nobody else was there, implying this was, so he figures he has the opportunity there. In other words, Marshall explains that you shouldn't think that he stayed away from the Aveda because he's afraid of Potiphar or anybody else in the household. We're saying everybody was there and he himself went in the Dvar Aveda and still ended up controlling himself. So that's the Kiddush Shem Shem. That's what we mean, Kiddush Shem Shemayim Baseser. Tosfos points out also, it's not just the fact that the Pasuk says nobody was in the house, it says Vayovoi habayis. So the word vayovoi is Moloshin bia. So it means that he came into the house having the intention of bia. So the pasuk says vayovoi habayis alasas malachdoi. So also Rav and Shmuel argue what the word malachdoi means. Chad amalasas malachdoi mamish. One of them says it means his actual work. The Medrash says particularly to look over his account books and make sure that everything is written correctly. Vachad amalasas tzrochav nichnas. The other one says he's going in to do his needs. In other words, to taka bimizana with her fitting with what Rabbi Yochanan is saying that he went in ledvar aveira. The Ralbach asks the question. I mean, he says usually whenever we talk about in figures from Tanakh, we're always trying to be melamed schus on them and say they weren't doing something so bad. Kol ha'omer, whoever chata in elatoya, for example. Why all of a sudden over here are we saying that Yosef was intending to do such a serious aveira? So he says the fact that it says lasis malachdoi. Why do we need to know he came into the house? What's the difference? Why he came in? And also he says it's not anything against Yosef. He only intended to do it in Machshava. It didn't actually come out Lapoil, so therefore it can't be held against him. We say Machshava Ra, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Mitzar for the Maisa, only when it comes to Avodah Zarah. Here where it wasn't, then therefore Adarabba, you could say that Adarabba, you say that that he eventually controlled himself, so that shows his greatness. There was an explanation that some of the Mefarshim say, I think Ben Yehoyada and others talk about, is that maybe he was Dafka trying to inflame his Yetzirah and then control it when it's at its height. Now, of course, that's very dangerous for a normal person to do. A person should never, usually a person should never do that because he may fall in. But David HaMelech tried that, and he also didn't make it. Yeah, so over here, but they're explaining the Pnimius in Yonim that Yosef was intending to do that. Anyway. So the Gemara says the pasuk continues. Ve'ein ish me'anshei abayis the goymer. No man of the people in the household was present. So the Gemara asks, how is that? Efshe bayis gadol kabeisa shel oisei rosha. How is it possible a big house, a big mansion like the one of that rosha Potiphar, lo hoya bo ish, and not a single person is in the house? Where was everybody? The answer is that day was the day of a Goyish holiday. On the side of here, it says instead of Chagam, it's really supposed to be Edom, which is the Gemara's usual derogatory name for a festival of Avodah Zarah. So it was there Chaga. All of them had gone to the temple, to their temple of Avodah Zarah. And Medrash says particularly that it was the day of the flooding of the Nile, where they made a big celebration of that and in honor of worshiping the Nile. So she says to herself, so she claimed that she was sick because Omra, she said to herself, there's no better time for me to get involved with Yosef like on this day because everybody's gone. Tosfos Shantz actually brings an interesting idea from a medrash that the ein ish means that. So what do you mean the ein ish? There's no man. Yosef himself is a man. The answer is that actually Yosef, as we just said, there was an opinion that he meant with varavera, but he checked and couldn't actually find that he has that eva, like it disappeared. It disappeared in order that he became a tumtum temporarily in order that Hashem should save him from the avera. But Marsha says that actually, when we said before that Kiddush Shem Shemayim Baseser, evidently all Gemara is disagreeing with that, because otherwise, how can he call that being Kiddush Shem Shemayim if he's physically incapable? So it means he was fully capable. But yeah. Anyway. So the pasuk continues. She grabbed him by his clothing and said, "Shichva imi." So at that moment, the image of his father came and appeared to him in the window. Some of the Mefarshim say actually what it means is that Yosef saw himself, his own reflection in the mirror, and we know that he looked like Yaakov. So therefore, that reminded him of Yaakov. And Omaloi, he says, Yosef, asidin achecha, she kosral avne ephod. In the future, your brother's names are all going to be written on the ephod. Va'ata b'neihem, and you're supposed to be among them. Ritzoncha she mocha shimcha b'neihem. Do you want that your name, if you do such an aveda, that your name is going to be erased from among them? V'tikore roya zonis, and that you're going to be called a person who keeps company with zonis. Dichtiv, as in fact, you have a pasuk v'roya zoynus ya'abed hoin, that the one who stays together with zoynus will lose a fortune. So that means, in other words, we're talking about a shame toy, Rashi says, which is greater than any fortune. So you're going to lose your good name because of that. Marsha says also the vote is the stones of the ephod and the choshen. We know were precious stones; they were worth a lot of money. We have, for example, the story of Jonathan ben Nissina, where they paid a fortune for a missing stone of the Choshen. So therefore, so Yaakov is literally telling him, you're going to lose that literal fortune of the value of the stone of the Choshen that should bear your name if you do this. There's also an interesting vote that says, you know, is on the stones of the Choshen, on the stones of the Choshen, we know besides for the names of the Shvatim, it also, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, it also had the names Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And also the words Shivte Yishurun, or there's different versions of what it said exactly. The point is, you need all the letters of the Aleph Beis over there, because the names of the Shvatim are missing four of the letters of the Aleph Beis. There's no Ches, there's no Tzadik, no Kuf, and no Tes. So therefore, so you need the name Yitzchak contains three of those, and Shivte contains the Tes. So now there's different explanations how those letters were arranged on the stones of the Choshen. There's an explanation of Rabbeinu B'chaye that the letters were distributed among the stones so that each stone has six letters. So for example, according to that, the stone with Reuven's name, Reuven is only five letters, so it had the Aleph of Avraham's name to make the six.
So you'd have altogether
72 letters or whatever, right? So only Binyamin is written six letters, so it doesn't have anything with it, but all the other ones have. So it comes out, according to that, if we say that what was added was Shivte Yeshurun, then it comes out on Yosef's stone that had the Vav and the Langanun. In addition, we just said before that Yosef had a hey added to his name, and he's called Yehosef. So therefore, that hints at Hashem, Yaakov is telling him, you're going to lose hoin, you're going to lose the hey of Yehosef and the vav nun of Yeshurun if you do this. Tosfos, by the way, points out, where do we see this in the Psukim? So he brings from a Moshe Adoshan, the Pasuk is saying there was no person of the members of the household there, implying there was a person who was not a member of the household, namely Yaakov. Also Tosfos says that he wasn't in the house, he was only appearing in the window. Miyad Vatesha Ve'esan Kashtoi, so right away you have Yaakov later describes in his bracha to Yosef, his bow stood firm. So what does that mean? Omer Rav Yechon, Meshum Rav Meir, Shava Kashto Leisonoi, his keshes, his bow, which means his shichvasera, which fires out with energy like an arrow from a bow, that went back and settled back in its place. He didn't end up emitting it with her as he was thinking of. Marsha also points out the keshes itself can refer to the actual aver. So therefore, it means, in other words, that he calmed down and didn't do it. Ben Yehoyada points out, by the way, the word roya that Yaakov is telling him, but roya zonis ya'abed hoin, the word roya is the same letters as erva. So therefore, instead of becoming an erva, instead he became a roya, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he became the pastor, the leader of the flock of the Jewish people. The pasuk continues, Vayafozu Zroya Yodav. The pasuk continues, the arms of his hands were bedecked with gold, but the Gemara is doubting, Vayafozu Meloshin Vayafozu, it's scattered out. So not Yodav Bakarka. What happened was, Yosef, after all, he has a tremendous taiva still at this point. So he stuck his fingers into the ground to like hold himself up, to prevent anything from going any further. His shichvas zera dribbled out from between his fingers. So in other words, Rashi explains, he's holding his weight on his fingers, so that way he should be in pain, and that way that'll make his yetzahara calm down. But nevertheless, he was so far gone that the shichvas zera still came out between his fingers. There was some mafoshim explain actually that it means it didn't come out of the normal place; it actually came out of his fingers to represent, in other words, that what the Gemara is going to go on to say that. He ended up losing the ability to have extra shvatim because of this. But so the pasuk continues. Midday, so they have like this. The whole pasuk goes, "Vakesha be'esem kashto." His bow stood in its firmness. Vayafozu zroya yadav. His arms were bedecked with gold. Midday avir Yaakov, from the hands of the mighty one of Yaakov. Misham roya Evan Yisrael. From there is the shepherd of the stone of Yisrael. So the Gemara is dashing this phrase by phrase. Vakesha be'esem kashto was saying represents that is keshes, that is shichvas zera didn't come out with Potiphar's wife like she wanted. By a foes who's really yodder was saying nevertheless it did dribble out from between his fingers. Midei avir Yaakov means me goram lo shiachokok al avne eifod el avir Yaakov, who caused it that he was eventually engraved on the stones of the eifod and of the choshen, is the mighty one of Yaakov, because we said Yaakov told him not to go ahead with it. And when the pasuk finishes, Misham Roya Evan Yisrael, from there is the shepherd of the stone of Yisrael. That means Misham Zoch Benasa Roya. Because of this, Yosef had the schus to become the shepherd of the Jewish people. Again, Erva becoming Roya, as Ben Yehoyada says.
Where was Yosef the shepherd?
Because he took care of the Jewish people. He took care of the Jewish people. He fed them like a shepherd feeds his sheep. Shinema Roya Yisrael Hazin. As we find that in Tillim, that we appeal to Hashem, the shepherd of Yisrael, listen, Noyeg Katzon Yosef, the one who leads Yosef like a shepherd. So in other words, what we see that Yosef was like a shepherd for the Jewish people, and we're asking Hashem, you also be like Yosef and shepherd us and take care of us. So we see that Yosef is called a shepherd. So the Gemara will continue. We'll continue tomorrow. Beis Hashem, talking about that. Talking about the after effects of this, and more about Yosef, and more about Yosef's later career. And we'll continue. Then we'll start getting into more about Shevet Yosef and Prius Yamsuf and whatever. And we'll get to all of that tomorrow. Beis Hashem.